Well, Boss Kettering of General Motors fame, and who was very much interested in the refrigerator business, was concerned about the lack of adequate refrigerants. And he called upon Tom Midgley and Albert Henry and Robert McNary to look for a safe refrigerant, one which would be colorless, odorless, tasteless, and non-toxic and non-flammable. And these gentlemen then made a study, an examination, and looked at all the possible compounds that might fit the bill from a physical constant standpoint for as refrigerants, and tabulated them and plotted them in accordance with the atomic table. And their deliberations led them to postulation that fluorine or compound might be suitable. They were not aware, of course, that all fluorine compounds were poisonous. That's what most people thought in those days. So they decided to repeat some of Swart's works, and actually did make some CCl2 F2, and found that its physical properties were such that it might be useful. Midgley reported a ACS meeting in Atlanta in 1930 that they had this, and so on, and it, and postulated it and demonstrated and said it could be safe. He could see, he could smell it. He could stick a match in it and so forth, and then it so on. They postulated and they did it. Midgley reported later, when he was being awarded the Perkin Medal, that there might have been some fortuitous circumstances in their work, because he called up a supply house and ordered 5 bottles of antimony trifluoride, 1 ounce bottles of antimony trifluoride, the entire country's supply, as far as he knew. They used 1 bottle of antimony trifluoride and reacted it, and it produced some CCl2F2, and led it onto a bell jar with a guinea pig, and the guinea pig just lapped it up and said, this is fine. And so they were elated that they had made something that looked like it might be worthwhile. Later, they used another bottle of antimony trifluoride and repeated the experiments and did everything except, the only thing was at this time the guinea pig kicked up its heels and died. They were in a disarray, dismayed. On further examination, they found of the 5 bottles of antimony trifluoride that Midgley had gotten, 1 of them was anhydrous and 4 of them had water crystallizations. And of course, when you reacted that with SBF3 and HF, you got some phosgene type materials, and that was the cause of their problem. If they had not chosen the anhydrous bottle first, they might have given it up as a bad hunch. And that was the start of that. The work there, DuPont went on and developed processes for a total of 5 fluorochloro chemicals over the next first 5 years of the 1930s, and marketed them through the Kinetic Chemicals Corporation, a joint venture of DuPont and General Motors.
Do you know anything about the origin of that name, Kinetic Chemicals?
I don't know anything. I don't know anything specific about how they chose the word kinetic. No, I don't. I guess I was too naive to even ask the question myself in those days.
And how long did that company last?
That company lasted for 15 to 20 years. I think essentially the life of the original patent on commercial patent for. CF for refrigerant 12 as freon refrigerant, and then when it was dissolved, I think DuPont bought out to General Motors interest, and DuPont continued to make manufacture refrigerants.
Now the, this now is this, where you came in.
This is where I came into the picture. Now, next thing that I want to record is that in 1932, which I'm sure you will recall, was the low point of the Great Depression. In 1932, I received a Bachelor of Science degree in chemistry from Manchester College. At that time, there was no possible way I could find any employment as a chemist, and I tried to determine what I was going to do. I would like to go on to university, but I hardly see how it was possible. I wrote to 125 different universities trying to get on their assistant staff with no success. Finally, with the collusion of a friend of mine who was going to Ohio State and had already gotten on the staff, I wormed my way into the university and spent 4 years there and ended up with a PhD. And in 1936, I was invited to join the DuPont Company. I did, and was immediately assigned to work in the fluorine chemical field at Jackson Laboratory.
Who did you report to when you first arrived at DuPont? Who were the people that
I was assigned to work in the fluorocarbon division, and Frederick B. Downing was division head of that division, and Anthony Binning was group leader of the group to which I was directly assigned. First couple of years I was with DuPont, I did whatever jobs came along working on fluorochemical compounds. Early in 1938, a crisis arose because of the proprietary ownership of Frigidaire into CF2Cl, CF2Cl, refrigerant 114, which they would not permit to be sold to any competing refrigerator manufacturers. Other refrigerator manufacturers were asking DuPont to do something, find us a way to get something we use in competition to this material. And I was assigned the problem of working on the problem of getting another refrigerant. I and my associates, we decided to make CF2Cl, CF2H, a compound which we felt would have similar refrigerant properties to the Freon 114, which was already being produced. I set out on a proposition to make this material. Up until that time, TFE was almost a laboratory curiosity. It had been reported as having been made a number of times in the literature, but circumstances were not too clear-cut, except in recent years, shortly before that, Ruff had reported making TFE by pyrolyzing CF4 in a carbon arc, electric arc. He took the crude TFE that was produced there, reacted it with bromine, and got the dibromo tetrafluoroethane compound. Then he pulled the bromine out with zinc and got a purified TFE and characterized and determined some of the physical properties at that time. A year or so later, Henny reported pulling Cl2 out of tetrafluorodichloroethane in a similar manner. And I decided to try to make this compound tetrafluorohcl ethane by starting out and making some TFE and then adding HCl to it to pay it. And I chose to make the TFE by pulling the bromine out of the tetrafluorodichloroethane. I was ambitious and decided to make about 100 pounds of the material, and did set up the apparatus and did convert material to about 100 pounds of TFE, and then purified it in the laboratory by distillation, stored it in small cylinders in a dry ice chamber, and set it aside to use later to make the proposed refrigerant.
Why did you select 100 pounds? Was there any reason you made such a large amount of it at the beginning?
We wanted to have enough to evaluate it as a refrigerant, to evaluate it thoroughly as toxicologically wise, as far as the effect on animals and so forth, and so it just seemed like a round number.
And you stored this in small cylinders.
In small cylinders.
You must have had a huge collection of cylinders.
I had quite a few. I said 1 to 2 pounds, so that would be, if it's say 2 pounds, that would be 50 cylinders. And I scrounged bub bomb type of cylinders, small oxygen cylinders and so forth, and I rinsed them out and used them to store my TFE in them.
And this was all kept at low temperature?
Kept at low temperatures, dry ice temperature.
All right, so then was what, April 6th, 1938?
After having made the TFE, then I set up a laboratory apparatus to add HCl to the TFE, and I would put the cylinder TFE on a scale and vaporize the TFE through a metering device into a electric heated carbon bed catalyst. A tube reactor, at the same time leading another system, leading a stream of HCl, which I had generated, and leading it through a metering device and trailer. And so that way I was making the tetrafluoroHCl ethane. On the morning of April 6, 1938, after having selected one of the cylinders we'd been using previously, My helper said, "Hey, Doc, did we use all the gas out of this cylinder?" I said, "No, I don't think so." He said, "Well, it's nothing's coming out, and I don't know what the heck is wrong." On further examination, it was quite evident that there was still material in the cylinder, but there was no gas pressure.
That was from the weight.
From the weight, there was material in the cylinder. But there was no pressure, and at least opening the valve completely open, there was no gas would come out. As further checking, they actually opened up the cylinder and ran a wire down through the valve to be sure there was no gas pressure. And later took the valve out of the cylinder and shook out some powder, which proved to be the first evidence of polymerization of TFE.
How did you conclude that polymerization had taken place? Were you aware of the polymerization as a phenomenon, a chemical phenomenon?
I was familiar with the fact that monomers do polymerize, and you make polymers out of polymerizing monomers. I was not aware that TFE would polymerize. As a matter of fact, I think the teaching of the time would be that no fully fluorinated ethylene molecule or halogenated ethylene molecule would polymerize. But this was like a proverbial bumblebee. It didn't know it couldn't polymerize, and it went ahead. Somebody's asked me in the past, what was your reaction? I said, "Well, God, we're going to have to start over now. We got particularly if all this other stuff has polymerized like this."
How many containers? You had made a large amount of the HCl addition before this particular incident happened. So this wasn't the first cylinder that you used.
This wasn't the first part. It wasn't the early part. How many cylinders we had used is a hazy memory now. I don't know how many we had. I know that we had made a fair amount of the proposed refrigerant, and we still had a lot of cylinders of TFE, though, to go.
And you also mentioned your helper. What was his name?
His name was Jack Reebok. He was a local southern New Jersey boy from Paulsboro, New Jersey, who'd come to work after school.
And did he have any reaction when this occurred?
Well, his reaction is, what the hell's going on, Doc? And he's the same thing as I. Well, we're going to have to start over if we're going to have to make this stuff.
When did you realize that that white powder had unusual properties?
Well, none right away, because all I could see was the powder. But I soon started to examine some of it to see whether I could dissolve it into anything, and I couldn't find anything in the laboratory that would dissolve it in any way at all, shape or form. I didn't react with anything, no chemical reaction I could determine, so those facts themselves said there's something unusual about this material. Yes.
Did you do that, the same day?
I did some of it the same day, anyhow. Some of it the same day.
Did you eventually work your way through the rest of the cylinders to see what?
Well, I don't remember how many cylinders that were open and cut open and things like that. But there was a substantial number.
Certainly,
I'm sure. Yeah,
certainly
yeah.
More than one.
Certainly more than one. Yeah.
More than two or three, probably.
Right.
This is a question which. Well, we talked about this before. In terms of the patents, you had the Teflon patent came in 1941.
Right.
And the others came 46.
Right.
Much later.
Well, first is after having found out that the TFE did polymerize, and one of the things I set about to do soon thereafter was to try to make TFE polymerize. And I did set up some experiments in which TFE was put into glass tubes without any designated catalyst, with potential catalyst, with catalyst and a solvent. And under all conditions, I did get some polymerization. And those studies formed the basis and provided the examples for the patent claims on the original patent of TFE as a composition of matter and how to produce it.
But the other processes came, you filed that patent in 39, it was granted in early 41, but you also had patents on the preparation of TFE and on the CHF2, CCLF2.
Right.
But those came after
They came afterwards because they got caught in the patent office secrecy order to cover up all the work on fluorine chemistry.
I see. Okay, that explains why there was that delay. This probably comes a little bit later, but I wanted to ask it now. You refer to it as PTFE. When did the name Teflon come into existence?
The name Teflon was coined for PTFE resin in 1944.
Oh, is that much later?
Much later, yes.
I see. Were commercial uses coming into being at that time?
That was still 1944. We were still under wartime secrecy, and DuPont had made some evaluations of potential uses, and of course maybe by that time we'll back up again. What are we going to do? Next question: what are you going to do with this stuff? See, so that. I didn't know much about what to use. I didn't know anything about polymer chemistry itself, but I was fortunate to be with a DuPont company who had a lot of chemists and engineers doing work in polymer fields. And so we asked some of our associates in the Central Research Department to take some of this powder and see if they could mold it in some way and characterize it a bit. And they did, using the first technique used was powder metallurgical techniques, and compressing a powder under pressure and temperature in a mold, did do some molding. And by the examination of that, and started to get some physical properties and so forth, and began to see. This led, of course, to examinations and postulations as what could be done with it, on what it would take to manufacture it, what it was going to cost, and so forth. Those deliberations at that point in time weren't too encouraging. Said this stuff's going to cost so much that nobody would ever buy it.
And were those decisions made by marketing people?
Those decisions were. I don't know whether marketing people had gotten into it at that time or not. They probably were made only. They were being deliberations only by research people at that time. But then we came up here and we started come up here to the time of when the country formed the Manhattan District. And Manhattan District people then began to study ways and means to separate uranium, and found out that they wanted to make fluorides of uranium and try to separate it that way. And they recognized they're going to need lots of materials. And when DuPont reviewed with some of the Manhattan Project people, particularly General Groves, who was director of the Manhattan Project, he said he heard about this new plastic material. He said, that sounds like something we're going to need. And he said, you guys better get a hold of it and develop it, or we're going to take it away from you.
Mm.
That was about the way that it went. And so with that encouragement and with that push and with the interest of DuPont people, work was stepped up to make fundamental studies, to make examinations, soon develop some techniques that could be a basis for at least pilot plant work. And then in the early 40s, they actually were pilot plants made, set up to make TFE, to polymerize TFE, to mold and fabricate TFE. All three separate strings coming together. This work was going on while they were making stuff, and I think that one of the men of DuPont was talking about DuPont's experience in fluorochemicals this morning. He said that all that was made during the whole war period, he had how much, it wasn't very much, but a lot of it got used by the military and by the Manhattan District, and I'm sure that DuPont had opportunities to evaluate it in some of their own uses at that point in time. And one point I can relate to you, one examination, one early thing, is there at Chambers Works had a dye process that involved nitrations with 70% fuming nitric acid. And this mixture had to be pumped. It was a very, very corrosive operation. And the pump failed at least once a week. And it had to be torn down and rebuilt. And one of the early tests of Teflon was to pack this pump with and valves with Teflon packing, and then they started up again and ran again, and it went so well that it went on. 6 months later, as I remember the story, I decided we'd better tear it down and see what it looks like. And tore it down, and it was everything was copacetti. It was still working all right. So there had been some cases where maybe it would be too expensive. Here was a case in point where it was cheap at any price.
There was something I missed. But I wanted to go back to the you had commented about your laboratory notebook. That was one thing that we...
Oh, yeah.
And I think I asked you if that still exists.
Yeah, my original notebook, which records my observations on the day that PTFE was discovered, does exist. It's in the hands of DuPont. And recently, some of the DuPont European people made some copies of this two-page spread and blew them up and asked me to sign a bunch of copies of them. And if you talk to Elena Kirsch, maybe you can get a copy of one.
We'll have to see if we can't get a hold of that. That would be excellent to have. Now, one of the things that's curious to me, after this event occurred in April of 38, your involvement with it changed.
Right.
Rather quickly.
And my involvement changed within a very short period of time, and this had nothing to do with what I wanted to do, or what I might not want to do, or what somebody else wanted to do. It so happened that there was another fellow that was working on tetras lead research. That was getting a promotion, and took him out of doing direct laboratory work to assistant director of the laboratory, and needed somebody to pursue that tetras lead work. And I was chosen to pursue that tetrethyl lead work. And so within months after the discovery there, that I was transferred into doing tetrethyl lead work. And I know it was within months, because on January the 1st of 39, I was transferred from the laboratory to the tetrethyl lead manufacturing organization as chief chemist of tetrethyl lead.
And what was your position before that? What was the title you had?
Research chemist.
Okay. In the Jackson work.
In the Jackson laboratory, yes.
Okay.
I was a research chemist assigned to fluorine, and I was a research chemist assigned to lead, and then I got transferred from the research organization to the manufacturing organization in tetrethyl lead.
Now, you were with the tetraethyl lead plant. I have here 39 to 45, I believe,
right.
Something like 39
to 45. And 39, when I got transferred to the tetraethyl lead organization, the use of antinoc compounds were expanding and growing rapidly. And it continued to grow rapidly for the next year or two, but it ran afoul of... Oh, you want to change?
Getting to the end of that tape.
Yeah.
Make sure I do it right.